We're exploring the impact of natural gas drilling on New York's water resources and the issues being debated in our neighborhoods throughout the country and globally. What is guiding people's decisions about whether or not to lease their land for gas drilling? And at what point do the rights of the individual diminish in the face of the health of an entire area? What impact is this having not only on the communities in the shale regions, but also on the national dialogue and policy-making decisions around energy extraction? What defines the American dream, and how does it impact the decisions being made in our communities? Local culture, generations of history, and beloved homes can be lost when the oil and gas companies, intent on fossil fuel extraction, move into a new region. We're facing a complete shift in our region as this largest ever concentration of gas lies in wait beneath our feet. The Highland and Lumberland Concerned Citizen Groups hosted a forum about the legal rights municipalities have in regulating drilling for natural gas. A couple hundred people were at the forum on February 19th, which was held at the Eldred High School. And this audio is from Helen Slotchy, who is the managing attorney of the Community Environmental Defense Council in Ithaca. She was followed by Ben Price, who's the project director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. So representatives from both New York and Pennsylvania shared what communities can do to regulate what happens in their community looking at home rule. I first met Joan Marie Roars on June 27, 2008 at the first gas drilling forum that was held in Sullivan County, New York at the Liberty High School. That event was co-sponsored by Catskill Mountain Keeper and the Sullivan County Division of Planning and Environmental Management. We speak again at this forum in Eldred, New York, that explores limits of towns' control over gas drilling. We're here at the forum about citizens' rights, about home rule in New York State. Share with me your thoughts about gas drilling and how they have evolved for you.
My name is Joan Marie Roars, and for 21 years, we've had our house in Smallwood. We have our son's house, he lives right across the road from us. When we first spoke, I was, well, you know, it's interesting. It's not going to affect me. It's out there. It'll happen at the other end of Bethel. I'm from Bethel. Smallwood is a hamlet in Bethel. And, you know, it's an interesting topic. You know, I didn't like the idea that someone was going to go into the ground, but it's their land. They're far away from me. In 2.5 years, I'm here today. Today, actually, I put on a button for no fracking. We have a no fracking sign in front of our house, and I have a blue ribbon for clean water. And I'm scared. I've gone from, well, it's not really going to affect me, I have a fence around my property, I'm okay, to learning that I live on top of the Marcellus Shell, that there are underground rivers which go all the way from the other end and could be passing under my house that no one knows. No one knows what's happening. And today, I have a 2-year-old niece. What am I going to leave? What's going to happen? Not just with me, but for the future. I've gone from not being interested to being scared to feeling like I can't fight back. So today, yes, I can. And hearing alternatives. It's been a process of becoming even more active.
Thank you so much for sharing with me. We can talk more, but thank you so much for speaking with me again and for sharing how your thoughts about gas drilling have changed.
I've grown. I don't feel so impotent, you know? I feel stronger, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. The forum was moderated by John Conway, who is the Sullivan County, New York historian since 1993.
Our first speaker is Helen Slotchy, the managing attorney of Community Environmental Defense Council, a pro bono public interest law firm based in Ithaca, New York. The CEDC works with citizen groups and municipalities that want to retain their rural character in the face of threatened industrialization, especially that from gas drilling. The CEDC recently prepared a local law for a gas drilling task force in a town in Tompkins County in upstate New York that prohibits high impact industrial uses. It is my honor this morning to introduce to you Helen Slotchy.
So, hello, and thank coming out here this morning, and many thanks to the organizers, highly concerned citizens, and their collaborators from across this region. We're based in Ithaca, where my husband and I live, and where we want to be able to continue to live in peace and quiet and with clean air, and that's why many of us are here today. We made specific choices to live in upstate New York, whether along the banks of the Delaware River, on an organic farm, or in a cabin in the middle of the woods. And the truth is that we wanted to stay that way. That's why we came to live here. And so we're often accused of being NIMBYs, but the fact of the matter is we don't want this in anyone's backyard. Not here, not in PA, not out west, and not in other countries. We believe, as I'm sure many of you do too, that methane gas is a bridge to a very ugly future and to a climate that's even more out of balance as we pump methane gas that's tens of times more potent than CO2 into the atmosphere. I was recently on a panel with Sandra Steingraber, and she had the most vivid description of the situation we're in that I have heard. And what she said went something like this. With apologies to Sandra, she's a much better poet than I am. Imagine you have a family member who's addicted to alcohol. They've gone through all the beer, all the wine, and all the liquor, and they've even gone through the cough syrup and everything else they can find. Then they learn that buried under the foundation of the family home, stashed away during Prohibition, is a stash of alcohol. And that family member sets about buying explosives and dynamite, and they're gonna blow up the floor of the house. Do you ask this person pretty please to try to slow down and maybe not wreck the house? Do you say, well, let's come up with some regulations and try to regulate the blowing up of the foundation of the house? No, we're gonna bar the stairs to the basement and you cannot blow up our home. And so that's why we're all here today, to try to call this crazy plan off. So we're looking for ways to cut off our addiction to fossil fuel. And so in the absence of this addiction to fossil fuel, clearly this harebrained scheme of methane gas extraction would be seen for what it is. But how do we go about saying no? What can we do? So I'm a New York lawyer, and I'm here today to talk about local land use law in the state of New York and how we can use local laws to just say no. We're fortunate here in New York to have much stronger home rule protections than many other states, including Pennsylvania. And unlike Pennsylvania, we here in New York have the power to say no to a wide variety of land uses. But before I begin to bore you with the answers to all the legal questions that you had about land use planning in New York but were afraid to ask, let me address one other question. What are we going to do if we don't focus on extracting methane gas? First, the answer to fossil fuel addiction is not the continued extraction of fossil fuels. Only when we take some of the fossil fuel options off the table will we get serious about alternative energy sources, and not just wind or solar, but biomethane, district heating, geothermal, and options that we haven't even invented yet because we keep subsidizing the oil and gas industry, convinced that we can't get along without them. But in fact, they can't get along if they don't have something to sell us. So they're the ones scrambling to find more things that they can control and sell us. And they have no incentive to try to find energy that they cannot use to control the world economies and governments. And this choice they offer us of jobs or the environment, often framed as the economy or the environment, is a false choice. Healthy environments provide tremendous economic benefits, and a healthy environment leads to economic growth. Degraded, polluted environments are not a pathway to economic prosperity. In fact, the opposite. Poverty is the highest in the most polluted states, and research shows that the poor just didn't happen to wind up there. The poverty comes after the environmental devastation. We can look to PA and West Virginia and out west and see whether or not resource extraction has made those communities rich, or the corporations rich and the communities poor. Which brings us back to the question that got us all out of bed and not doing the things we prefer to do, and instead focused on becoming educated activists and community leaders. What can we do? So now for the legal lecture. So in New York, localities derive their power from the state constitution and its implementing legislation, the municipal home rule law, and the town, village, or city law as appropriate. The New York state constitution empowers local governments to adopt, amend, and repeal zoning regulations, the power to perform comprehensive or other planning work, and the power to enact laws relating to the government, protection, order, health, safety, and well-being of persons or property within their municipality. I've asked to be here this morning to talk about a land use approach that our law firm has developed that we believe will allow communities to preserve their rural character and local agriculture, tourism, and sustainable economies in the face of threatened industrialization. First, let me explain that I've spent the past 2 years working on gas drilling issues. When I went to my first gas drilling meeting, I had no particular opinion one way or the other about gas drilling. I certainly wasn't an environmentalist, but thousands of hours of research later, I must tell you that now I don't think that gas drilling is being done safely in our country at this time. You might have already guessed that. But when I think about the most negative impacts from this looming industrialization, I think of the truck traffic and the associated destruction of our roads, of our enjoyment of our homes, and the negative impacts from all this diesel exhaust. And this is the impact that can most change our region and is an impact that occurs even when everything goes right. So as you listen to me here today, and just as importantly when you listen to other advocates, including those for the gas drilling companies, their regulatory partners, and landowner coalitions, you need to know what is motivating that person. Our motivation and bias is that we are looking into this issue not from the perspective of what can we do to help localities accommodate industry. What can we do to make sure that we don't pass a road use ordinance that industry says is too onerous, or what federal or state funding we might be able to find so we can build infrastructure or train our school children to take some of the most dangerous jobs that are out there. Our firm is looking at this issue from what can we do to say no. So that's my bias, our bias as a firm. In fact, I'm proud of this bias because given the way lawyers and law firms and corporations work, usually lawyers are only out looking for clients who can pay them. But how can an eagle, the night sky, or the Delaware River pay a lawyer's bill? So with the help of grants and donations from regular people, we seek to give a voice to the environment and individual citizens who would not otherwise have the funds to work with a lawyer on environmental causes. As we've investigated and researched the problems with industrialization and truck traffic and the toxic waste that the industry conveniently calls brine, and we didn't just accept what industry and their regulatory partners and the landowner coalitions and all of their lawyers had to say as the starting point. When we simply started at the beginning and asked the question so many of you have asked, can they really just come into our town and do whatever they want, put a drilling rig right next to my house or on a farmer's field and just dump exploration and production waste in our county landfill, haul toxic fluids in for recycling, bang pipes next door all night long, coat our homes with silica dust? We concluded that if a town used zoning to prohibit the land-based and community-based negative impacts of such activities, the answer was no. They can't do that, at least not if the town has the political will to say no and follow certain procedures and a process in getting there. But surely this can't be true, you might say. We've been told for so long and by so many that there is nothing we can do. So let's run through the objections that we hear when we talk about the proposal that towns can draft a zoning ordinance that protects the health, safety, and welfare of its residents through the prohibition of high-impact industrial uses. And when I talk today about our proposed law, I am speaking of this draft law that we prepared for a town gas drilling task force in Tompkins County, although a similar law can be drafted for other municipalities that's tailored to that community's comprehensive plan and community goals. So first, some people have asked, does the town have the right to exclude or ban an industrial use, any industrial use, not just say gas drilling? These people have heard that towns are restricted from prohibiting certain uses, such as adult entertainment or housing for people of very limited means. And so they wonder, do these restrictions apply to banning industrial uses? They do not. Those restrictions are very limited and very specific in nature. They have to do with the protection of constitutional rights, specifically First Amendment rights, such as free speech. But there is no question that exclusion of a specified industrial use is a proper and legitimate use of land use laws. There's no dispute. It's what lawyers call black letter law. In a 1974 case known as the Village of Belterre, a case which, by the way, involved a New York State zoning ordinance, the United States Supreme Court specifically stated the town had wide latitude to use its zoning laws to protect the public welfare. The court held, and I quote, "The concept of public welfare is broad and inclusive. the values that it represents, are spiritual as well as aesthetic. It is within the power of the legislature to determine that the community should be beautiful as well as healthy, spacious as well as clean, well-balanced as well as carefully patrolled, a quiet place where yards are wide, people are few, and motor vehicles restricted are legitimate guidelines in a land use project. This goal is a permissible one. The police power is ample to lay out zones where family values, youth values, and the blessings of quiet seclusion and clean air make the area a sanctuary for people. And the New York Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state of New York, reached the same conclusion in a case called Gurnett Asphalt. And in Gurnett, a town had used zoning to ban mining, and the people who wanted to mine challenged the ban, saying it was unconstitutional exclusionary zoning. The court, again the highest court in New York, rejected this challenge. The court said, we have never held that the exclusionary zoning test, which is intended to prevent a municipality from improperly keeping people out, also applies to prevent the exclusion of industrial uses. A municipality is not obliged to permit the exploitation of any or all of its natural resources within the town as a permitted use if limiting that use is a reasonable exercise of police power to prevent damage to the rights of others and to promote the rights of the community as a whole. That's the holding of the New York Court of Appeals, again, the highest court in the state of New York. Okay, well then, isn't such a ban inconsistent with state or federal policy? And yes, the state and federal government have indicated broad support for natural gas extraction, buying industry's promotion of this fossil fuel as somehow green, and have gotten even the national environmental groups so desperate to stop the pillage of mountaintop removal that they're willing to make the sacrifices that methane gas entails. But I digress. But we're not a nation or state of a single policy. Let us not ignore there are many articulated state and federal policies that support the prohibition of high-impact industrial uses in rural areas. I'm only going to talk about two state policies. But let's start with, say, the state constitution. Our constitution provides, the policy of the state shall be to conserve and protect its natural resources and scenic beauty, and encourage the development and improvement of its agricultural lands for the production of food and other agricultural products. The legislature, in implementing this policy, shall include adequate provision for the abatement of air and water pollution and of excessive and unnecessary noise, the protection of agricultural lands, wetlands, and shorelines, and the development and regulation of water resources. So the proposed law would seem to be consistent with that. Next, why don't we look at the environmental conservation law, the very law that contains the article on oil, gas, and solution mining. The policy of that entire law, and not just the section on gas drilling, provides, the quality of our environment is fundamental to our concern for the quality of life. It is hereby declared to be the policy of the state of New York to conserve, improve, and protect its natural resources and the environment, and to prevent, abate, and control water, land, and air pollution in order to enhance the health, safety, and welfare of the people of the state and their overall economic and social well-being. It shall further be the policy of the state to develop and manage the basic resources of water, land, and air to the end that the state may fulfill its responsibility as trustee of the environment for present and future generations. Again, another policy that our proposed law is consistent with. But one principle of preemption analysis, which is what we're really talking about when we discuss whether this local law would be against federal or state policy, is that when one is trying to determine whether a federal or state law or policy preempts, supersedes, or put another way, invalidates a local law, is that you don't go looking for implied preemption when the extent of the preemption is set forth expressly in the statute. And that makes sense. If the legislature has taken the time to tell us what is preempted and what isn't, we don't need to go hunting around looking for more insight into their intentions. And if we go back to the Gurnett Asphalt case, the court there said exactly that. And in another case in 2008, the Court of Appeals held that interpreting an express preemption clause, it is unnecessary to consider the doctrines of implied or conflict preemption. Instead, the resolution turns solely upon the proper interpretation of statutory language. So the Court of Appeals has gone on to say that the inconsistency of a local zoning law with a state law of general applicability is, of course, insufficient to trigger preemption power, for if that were so, the supersession authority granted by the municipal home law rule would be meaningless. So that's all good news for us. So what does happen when local zoning law intersects with state law? In New York State, statutes that affect the zoning powers of local governments fall into three broad categories. Cases where the local government gets no say. The state decides where it wants to put a particular use, and that's it. Cases where the local government can say yes or no to the use, but once you say yes, that's it. You can't regulate it. And situations where you can say yes, no, or yes with these conditions. And the legislature's pretty good about making it clear which category of law falls into. So when they want to cite facilities for the mentally disabled, they expressly withdraw the zoning power of the local government. And then there are ones such as laws regulating solid waste, where the statutes specifically contemplate municipal zoning and regulation. And then there are laws like the mining law, the alcohol beverage control law, and the oil, gas, and solution mining law that allow a municipality to say yes or no to a use. But once you say yes, you're prohibited from regulating the operation or process of the use. So part of our proposed law deals with solid waste, and there's no issue with that under the state law, because municipalities are free to zone and regulate solid waste. But other parts of our proposed law would pick up methane gas exploration and the disposal of their waste because of the high externalities that that industry currently inflicts on the communities around it. So does this run afoul of the prohibitions in environmental conservation law? We don't think so. What that law says is that the provisions of this article shall supersede. Okay, there's our express supersession language. So in this case, we don't need to go around searching for more conflicts that put it out there. The provisions of this article shall supersede all local laws or ordinances relating to the regulation of the oil, gas, and solution mining industries, semicolon. And then there's an exemption clause, an exception to that prohibition against regulation. And that reads, but shall not supersede local government jurisdiction over local roads or the rights of local governments under the real property law. So a local law may regulate the oil, gas, and solution mining industries if it's a law that regulates the roads or real property taxation and is otherwise within the power of the municipality. So the statute reads again, the provisions of this article shall supersede all local laws or ordinances relating to the regulation of the oil, gas, and solution mining industries, but shall not supersede local government jurisdiction over local roads or the rights of local government under the real property law. So the question is, what does relating to the regulation of the oil, gas, and solution mining industries mean? When does a local law relate to the regulation of this industry? In answering this question, we can turn to our courts, and in fact, the New York courts have had occasion to interpret similar phrases, including in the mining statute, which previously read, much like the oil, gas, and solution mining statute reads now. So what did the court decide? Court of Appeals held that regulating an industry meant regulating its operations and processes and did not mean local zoning aimed at limiting the externalities of a land use. And if you look at the legislative history of the statute to try to get some idea of what the intent of the legislature was, there's barely a mention of this particular section because, in fact, this was part of a larger bill that was aimed at increasing permitting fees so that the DEC could hire more regulators. I guess some things really never do change. We don't think that this interpretation of the statute, that this statute says what it means. Localities cannot regulate industry. But that doesn't mean that they can't apply their local land use laws, is particularly bold, visionary, clever, or creative. Sometimes I like to think so. This is not a situation where we're trying to create new law, attempting to overturn a law that we don't agree with, or even trying to distinguish a lower court holding that goes against what we're saying. It's a fact that there's not one single published New York State case that says municipalities cannot do what we suggest they can do. Ban high-impact industrial uses. So what's the next objection? Okay, well, won't the landowners and the landowner coalitions or their lessees sue the town if we pass such an ordinance. While, of course, anyone can sue anyone for practically anything, and in the land use context, it's not unheard of for disgruntled landowners to sue a town when a town passes a zoning ordinance that they don't like, alleging that the law constitutes a taking of their property. But in the first place, we don't believe that a prohibition on high-impact industrial uses is a compensable regulatory taking. Certainly when the government physically invades your property or takes it and subjects it to its own use, the government's required to compensate you. But enacting regulations that limit a use only results in a compensable taking when the regulations so diminish the value of property that the owner is left with no or virtually no permitted use of the property, no economic value. In this case, the owner of the property is left with whatever the use of the property is now, which is presumably something other than high-impact industrial use. Maybe it's a residence, maybe it's a farm, but presumably it has value. Furthermore, to the extent that the gas drilling industry, at least as it's currently executed, falls into this definition of high-impact industrial use and would thus be prohibited, in New York, the only right that's impaired is the right to explore, because in New York, no one owns methane gas until it's been brought to the surface and captured. So you don't own the gas in the first place. And furthermore, gas drilling is not completely excluded under the terms of this proposed ordinance. The only reason gas drilling falls into the definition of high-impact uses is the externalities that result on the community and surrounding properties, given how industry currently operates. Property owners remain free to drill for oil and gas to the extent they can do so without imposing major traffic congestion on everyone else, produce deleterious substances that have to be disposed of elsewhere, and have other negative impacts on their neighbors. While we like to think it's my property and I can do whatever I want, that's only true if you can do what you want without negatively impacting other property owners. Because after all, they have the right to enjoy their property as well. No one has the right to conduct a nuisance. It's not a property right enjoyed by industry, so nothing's been taken. But still, you might say, well, even so, the town could get sued and would have to defend the lawsuit. So we built into the proposed law a requirement that an administrative challenge be brought before the town as a condition before bringing any lawsuit alleging any sort of taking. So if a landowner were to claim, this is an unconstitutional deprivation of my property rights, substantive due process, or equal protection, they have to bring a claim in front of the town. And both federal and state courts require that administrative remedies be exhausted prior to filing for judicial relief. So a town would not be in a position where it was blindsided by a court case seeking damages. A town will be in a position to evaluate the merits of a claimant's case and to pursue an appropriate course in advance of a court filing. In other words, a town would be in a position to control its own destiny as to whether to stand its ground or retreat. If it retreats at the administrative remedy stage, then there's no court case and, of course, no damages. In conclusion, we don't believe the legal strategy that we have outlined is particularly novel or out of the box. It doesn't involve challenging the holding of any published judicial decision, and there's absolutely no reported New York case at any level that says that what we're suggesting cannot or should not be done. While, of course, no one can guarantee that a lawsuit will not be filed, we believe it is much more likely than not that a town would prevail in a lawsuit if one were brought challenging the law, and moreover, there's this administrative remedy provision, which should act to place a town in control of its own liability destiny should any real risk of a damage award arise. I hope that we have addressed the concerns and questions that you may have about whether or not a proposed law that would prohibit high-impact industrial uses is a worthwhile approach in the first place, and that we can next turn to a discussion of what such a law would actually look like in towns like yours. Thank you very much.
While we're waiting for your questions, we're going to start off with two. Helen, I know that you briefly mentioned this in your remarks, but I wondered if you might go over it again, please. We have more than 4,000 acres under lease already here in the town of Highland. Does that fact make the town especially vulnerable to lawsuits if they pass zoning regulations that prohibit drilling? And if you might, in answering that question, cover the additional points of who might be expected to sue and how would that be handled if it did indeed take place?
So, as I mentioned before, if a landowner has leased, what they have granted to the gas drilling company is the right to explore on their land for oil and gas. No one at this point owns that oil or gas. So, and the only reason under the way we've crafted the law would not say gas drilling is prohibited. It would say activities that have a number of these negative impacts. So we actually came up with a list of 12 negative impacts, including sequestering use of water. You'll notice with the Delaware River Basin Commission, as with the Susquehanna River Basin Commission, they have this category of consumptive use, and water that evaporates or transpiration is considered a consumptive use, in the same way that sending water off in a rocket ship to the moon is, when they're very different, the sequestering of water versus this more traditional consumptive use. So there's a variety of sort of categories: use of explosives, high frequency, high impact truck traffic, production of deleterious substances, which is a defined term. So what's prohibited are these negative impacts to the community. So gas drilling itself never is named, just these impacts that happen to include not only gas drilling, but a number of other negative industrial type uses. So because the use itself is not prohibited, what is prohibited is based on presumably a town's comprehensive plan, which talks about protecting agriculture and rural character and things like that. You really haven't taken anything away, as I mentioned, because there's no right to conduct a nuisance. You aren't specifically identifying gas drilling. One can drill for gas as long as they can do it in a way that doesn't negatively impact everyone else. So a lawsuit that could be brought, an actual takings claim, could be brought in state court, although we have built in this administrative remedy that says you have to come to the town first so the town can sort of see what the case would look like and decide what to do. So we think that the prospect of losing a lawsuit or the argument that the town would be subjected to the potential of lawsuits is pretty much covered by the way that the statute itself is drafted and then this administrative remedy coupled with case law in the state of New York. So that's sort of the gist of it.
Okay, I'm going to combine these next questions to try to cover them together. Can high impact industrialization be banned in all zones by a municipality, or does there have to be some place in a town that allows that use? And how quickly can towns implement their zoning regulations? Also, Helen, if you might also address, do you know of any pending New York State lawsuits with municipalities or the state by gas interests?
So as far as whether you can ban high impact industrial uses in all zones, the answer is yes. You can completely exclude industry from your town. It's not like the adult entertainment or low-income housing where you can regulate where it is, but you can't completely exclude it. In New York, you can completely exclude industry from your town. As far as implementing zoning regulations, it is a process. The comprehensive plan has to support the zoning amendment, so in some cases, many towns have very supportive comprehensive plans, but if they didn't, the first step would be amending the comprehensive plan, which requires public notice and a hearing, and then adoption by the town board. To adopt a zoning regulation, again, requires preparation of that ordinance. Some communities, it has to be reviewed by the planning board. Other communities, the town board can do it on its own initiative. There has to be a public hearing. There has to be a seeker analysis. There has to be referral to the county. All of that can be compressed, to be done in 30 days. And then there has to be the hearing or the town board meeting where the town actually adopts the law, then it gets sent to the Secretary of State's office, and then it's effective. So several months to do this, but not a year. I don't believe, I mean, there are various lawsuits out there potentially between disgruntled landowners and the gas companies and the like, but there really isn't any sort of big case presently pending in New York that we're all waiting for to come down and hear how it's gone.
All right, while we're on the subject of suing, you can't spell Sullivan County without Sue. What are the responsibilities and liabilities of landowners contributing to pollution from drilling on their property? Can they be sued? And what about citizens suing the towns for allowing gas drilling?
So as far as landowner liability, landowners and the gas companies are liable for whatever pollution may be caused from their activities. Although presently, and no one has contested this yet, it's unclear whether it is a strict liability activity or whether you have to show that the gas company or the landowner had a reasonable probability to know that what they were doing was going to negatively impact you. And so an affected person who was damaged by pollution could argue that what the gas drilling industry does is so dangerous, so ultra-hazardous, that they should be held liable no matter what happens, sort of even if they follow all their best practices. In the absence of, and that's questionable whether that would be the case in New York or not, it's never really been looked at. And in the absence of strict liability, which is not often employed, but can be employed in the cases of dynamiting and things like that. In the absence of strict liability, you have to prove your case. So you have all the problems that people are having endemic. Was your water contaminated before? Even if you showed, let's say, benzene fell off the property, benzene came into your land, benzene's in your water, benzene's in your person, well, maybe you got the benzene in your body because you pump gas, and, you know, so it's a very difficult standard of proof, unfortunately. But to the extent that a case could be made out, both the landowner and the gas company would be liable. And then the division of that liability can be divided up amongst themselves. So a lease could provide for an indemnification from the gas company. But as between the whole world and the gas company and the landowner, they're both on the hook. And then they have to fight amongst themselves over how to allocate it. Oh, citizens suing the town. So on the issue of citizens suing the town officers do have an obligation to protect the health, safety, and welfare of their community. And certainly town officials that are unwilling to take steps to attempt to protect the health, safety, and welfare of their citizens should resign. If the prospect of acting in the public interest is not something someone's prepared to do, probably the first thing to do would be to ask that person to resign before going ahead and suing the town. But if a town, and then the town generally has legislative and other immunity from suits. So it would be, so again, anybody can sue anybody for anything. And it would certainly, you know, be interesting to say, you know, we're suing you because you did such a bad job. But whether you could actually win in that case, you'd really have to show that the town board was motivated by malice, personal financial interest, or basically some level of criminal activity, which is why on the reverse side, whether you would really win suing the town because they enacted this law, a town gets great deference in its decisions. The standard when one goes to overrule a decision is arbitrary and capricious, which is ultimately insane, is sort of the standard. Did you have any reasonable basis for deciding what you wanted to decide? So a town board enjoys quite wide latitude in what they decide to do. But I think the real answer, if a town board was unwilling to act, although they acknowledge that, yes, this is a problem, but personally, I'm just worried. I don't want to be the one making this decision. That person shouldn't be in public office.
Okay, we're going to shift gears here for just a moment. Current New York State DEC regulations require a state environmental quality review for all land use projects. Why wouldn't the requirement of a full environmental impact statement protect us and our resources?
So, SEAKER is this State Environmental Review Quality Review Act. But one of the provisions of SEAKER is that if the DEC or even other municipalities or governmental authorities believe that a particular action is either one that's going to be replicated across the state or will have cumulative impacts, or there'll be different projects in different places but they're all really the same, the state can pass, and other groups as well, but the state has, in the instance of gas drilling, passed what's called a generic environmental statement, where they say, we've looked at gas drilling and we've decided that there's no environmental impact from gas drilling. And so there is such a thing. In 1992, the state passed a generic environmental impact statement for gas drilling. So a full site-specific environmental impact statement where the town where the project is located gets to make an environmental decision on this project has been removed by the state. They've said, we've done the work for you, we've looked at it, and we've concluded there's no problem. When in 2008, the state revised the spacing units and came up with different sizes and looked at this high volume horizontal hydrofracking, after they passed the law, people were able to get to the governor and say, look, like, your old generic environmental impact statement is not going to work for this new type of proposed drilling. So you need to issue a supplement to this generic environmental impact statement. And that's this process that's been going on for the past 2 years, first with the scoping and then with the draft statement, and then that's the subject of this Executive Order 41 that Patterson issued in December, that Cuomo reinstituted in January, and that says we're going to come out with our supplemental draft environmental impact statement in June. We're going to have some undesignated public comment period. The minimum is 30 days, so probably what we can count on. Then they can issue the final supplemental generic impact statement. And no one knows what that impact statement is going to say in particular about perhaps setbacks or other regulations. But generally, that is going to be the sole determinant in the absence of very limited site-specific reviews that might take place in a floodplain or some other areas. But there's no way for a town to conduct its own environmental review from start to finish and make its own decisions about what it would like to do with a gas well.
Okay, we've seen a lot of people are interested in the legal aspects, the suing aspects. First of all, Helen, could you address the issue of existing leases? In other words, if there are leases in place, or even if drilling starts before the zoning is changed or the new zoning is adopted, are those existing leases grandfathered?
So in New York, under when zoning changes, there is an ability for a property owner to have vested rights in a previously existing, now non-conforming property use. But in order for a property owner to have vested rights, there has to be an actual ongoing use. Simply having signed a lease that would allow for this prospect of exploration and this hope of ultimately trying to find gas, that's not a use that's already in place. If instead there was an exploratory well that had been permitted, or there was, you know, existing Trenton Black River wells here that might somehow would get picked up in this definition, existing projects would be grandfathered, but the simple existence of a lease would not create a grandfathering situation. Those leases are subject to, as are really ultimately any and all, even non-conforming uses, to the rule of nuisance, that you have no right to a nuisance. And just generally any, you know, unreasonable negative impact on your neighbors or your community as a whole.
Well, we have a number of questions here that deal with conflicts of interest. Should there be full disclosure of any town official that has an interest in gas leasing? And if so, should they recuse or step down from their town obligations or responsibilities? What would constitute a conflict of interest in a town board, planning, or zoning board official? Would leasing for gas necessarily constitute such a conflict? And does the CEDC have a template for recusal or removal of town officials who have signed gas leases or otherwise have a conflict of interest on fracking issues?
So on the conflict of interest issue, the primary conflict of issue is at the state level. And that statute primarily deals with the awarding of contracts to family members. And then at the local level, localities are each required to adopt their own code of ethics. So you have to look at precisely what your town's code of ethics provides. The AG's office, not looking at this particular issue, has in some cases said, the financial interest in a gas lease is sort of too tenuous. Nothing that a town decides is really going to have any impact on whether gas drilling proceeds or not, so they can't possibly really have a financial interest. That's different in the sort of law that we're proposing, because this would have, as presently the gas drilling is executed, it could change in the future, but as gas drilling is presently undertaken, it would be an excluded use and thus would have the potential to affect the financial interests of a town legislator. So in that instance, most of these codes of ethics, you know, they vary a bit, but as a general matter, a town official has a duty to disclose under the public officers law a financial conflict and to recuse themselves from issues with financial that could financially affect them. On the flip side, sometimes people say, well, what if somebody's just, you know, they've gone to some of these meetings, I know they're against gas drilling, you know, can't we get them, if you're on the other side, can't we have them have to be recused because they're so biased, they're not, you know, there's no way they're gonna vote for gas drilling. And the AG's office made it very clear that you have to have a financial interest, that simply having a decision sort of one, you know, or motivations one way or another of a desire to protect the environment or whatever, you know, rural character, things like that, that that's not a prohibited conflict of interest, but that where your financial interests are at stake, there's a duty to disclose and a duty to recuse themselves. We don't have any, we haven't specifically worked on that issue other than looking at it in the context actually of the case where they were trying to get a person to have to recuse themselves because they were an activist, and which is how we sort of wound up at this. But that's certainly something that groups are working on and, you know, that we'd be happy to talk with people about.
Okay, again, I'm going to combine a few of these questions. In the case EnviroGas versus the town of Keystone, didn't one of New York State's highest courts determine that municipalities are prohibited from regulating natural gas wells? Combined with that, is there a legal defense fund to help pay for the defense of an industry lawsuit? And has the CEDC identified a particular community for a court test case?
So there is a case called EnviroGas versus Town of Keystone, and it did decide that a town could not regulate oil and gas. And we agree that you cannot regulate oil and gas industry. What the town wanted to do in that instance was to require bonding and permitting fees. And the court said, we agree, this has the potential for many terrible negative impacts on your town, but you are not allowed to regulate the oil and gas industry. That's been preempted. But that town was not attempting to impose a zoning use prohibition. So that case is not, I mean, it's relevant, but it's not on point to this, because we concede that cannot regulate the industry, but you can prohibit a land use, and that prohibition of the land use is not a regulation of the industry. So that's how we would distinguish the EnviroGas versus Town of Keystone, because that was an instance where they were trying to actually regulate the operation of the industry by imposing a bond requirement. On the issue of a legal defense fund, we actually had some conversations with various foundations and things on this, and people in a variety of communities that want to get going on this. The foundation said, well, go get some laws passed first. Then we can worry about the legal defense fund. But I think that there are a number of communities that want to work on this. We're prepared to help with this. We believe that it'll be possible to try to recruit other lawyers. We're not litigators by trade, so we've done all this research and we're happy to help with this. We will need some litigation assistance if we were asked to help with this. So the idea of a legal defense fund is a great one and one that many people are thinking of. And the idea of sort of communities, you know, sort of agreeing to work cooperatively on this. And there is no particular community identified for a court case. In fact, you can't bring a case unless there's a case in controversy. So no matter which communities sort of pass laws first or the most posed for this, the issue will come when permits are issued, either in the form of a gas drilling company that has a permit that sues because they want to proceed with this, or a town suing a gas company and the landowner saying, seeking injunctive relief that you can't proceed with this. So which town sort of winds up being the first town to take this issue on will be a matter really ultimately that the DEC and the gas industries will decide when they issue a permit, the first permit that they issue in a town that doesn't want this versus towns that do want this.
Okay, I have lots more questions. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. So we're going to take a moment so that our cameramen can switch their tapes and whatnot. Helen, I think, will be available if anyone wants to ask her questions individually. There are some other great questions here that we didn't get to, and I apologize for that. But hopefully she's covered most of the pertinent points. And again, Helen's objective was to educate us on how to use our zoning, our master plans, to decide where each municipality respectively might want to restrict heavy impact industrialization, not specifically in any way restricted to gas drilling. It has to be a wider interpretation of that industrialization. So let's just take a very short break and then we will welcome Ben Price.
John Conway closed the forum by saying, quote, "This is not a political issue for Democrats or Republicans. This is about the rights of communities to safeguard their environment and water."